All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by The Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Oilers Nation Radio, episode 86. Here we are. It's Friendly Neighborhood Bag Milk. I've got Tyler Yaremchuk manning the board. I've got The Nation Dan looking confused on FaceTime. And I've got Rick here, and your hair, my friend, is looking fresh these days.
Thanks, buddy. We're getting some good length of this right now. I don't quite know what to do with it, but I do enjoy running my hands through it.
I bet. It looks very soft.
It does, actually.
As always, I want to start off the podcast by giving a shout out to our friends at Sherwood Ford the Giant out in beautiful Sherwood Park, Alberta. Go ahead and follow them on Twitter at Sherwood Ford and on Instagram at @SherwoodFord_TheGiant. If you do have any issues during this time, be it with finance on your Ford vehicle or with repairs, or you're looking for a new whip, our friends at Sherwood Ford, the Giant, are there for you. Today, we are starting off the podcast a couple of minutes early. For you, the listener, you would have no idea because Tyler is very excited about the snowbirds flying overhead. So we needed to get going.
Listen, if this podcast is not done by 2 o'clock and I miss the snowbirds, I'm going to fucking flip.
What's the deal anyway? Like, are they just doing a tour over the city? How do I know if I get to see them or not?
I don't know. I don't care. But I have very little to look forward to in this quarantine life. And watching those planes for 8 seconds will give me great joy.
There's like a map. There's a map you can look on. They come down to the north of the city, and then they're going to go across the river valley and down the river valley, come back east, and then south.
I heard that at 2:05, they'll be crossing through Mournville. And since I'm in like the north side of St. Albert, I need to be ready to go by 2:05.
Well, I'm looking at this here, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to see the snowbirds. And this is very upsetting to me because if I'm starting this early.
Dude, we're all going to be able to see it.
Well, I hope so.
There's like nothing in the sky.
There's no clouds. It's a gorgeous day outside. And you can see fucking forever.
Well, so boys, we need to get to action here because the snowbirds, they wait for no man.
The snowbirds wait for no man. Title of the podcast.
Like tea time.
Tea time also waits for no man. What did you say, Tyler? I like that title.
The snowbirds wait for no man.
This is how we workshop a podcast mid-podcast.
Hell yeah.
All right. So today, a little bit of Oilers news. Former friend, former Edmonton Oiler, Alex Hemsky officially retired today. I personally thought he was retired a couple of years ago. I didn't know that he was not officially retired, but apparently that happened today. I guess Cam Lewis covered it on OilersNation.com. I guess Hemsky was actually hoping that he would be able to play a couple of years in Europe, but the concussion issues he suffered in Montreal did not succeed, so that was off the table. Gentlemen, I just kind of want to talk about number 83 and his time here with the Oilers. What is your favorite or most memorable Alex Hemsky moment? The Nation, Dan, when you're thinking Hemsky, what are you thinking?
He's one of those guys that, like, he defined the 2000s for the Oilers, right? A lot of promise, a lot of excitement, and a lot of hope, and not a lot of finish there. and he was always one of those guys that you begged him to shoot more and pass less, all that kind of stuff. But my favorite memory of Hemsky was the Detroit series. He didn't know what was going to happen in that game six, but the way that they finished off the Detroit Red Wings with Hemsky scoring that goal, standing in the crease, he's one of those guys that, yeah, like I said, he defined the 2006 or the 2000s Oilers, and his passing was just bar none the best on that team at that time.
Rick, you're thinking Hemsky. What are you thinking?
Just the relentless fight that he used to have to get in through with Regier and anybody else all the time, that, you know, it didn't matter who it was in front of him or what they did to him. He was getting back up and he was getting back into the game. And for a guy of his size and, you know, like media always gave him shit for being the last guy on and the first guy off for practice and stuff like that. And tried to, I think, paint him with a brush of some sort by saying that, but you saw what he did on the ice, and in that 60 minutes when he was playing, that you, for a guy his size to get back up and take the beatings he did, that is what it is to be an Oiler back then.
Tyler, Mr. Hemsky, what do you think?
With Dan said it, without a doubt, the best moment of his Oilers career is 06. Game 6, 06, that goal he scored, I love watching that highlight, man. If there's one Oilers game I could go back and continually watch highlights of, it's game 6 in 06, and it's in large part because of Hemsky. And I love that moment in the call. Now I'm forgetting who the color guy is, who he goes, like, the nerve of this kid. Because he's just, it's game 6. It's a huge moment, and he's dangling guys in the neutral zone. Like, him and George Laroque were my first two favorite Oilers. They were the two Oilers that I remember, like, absolutely falling in love with early in my fandom. So, I mean, he's essentially been retired for a while, and the concussion stuff is unfortunate. And I also liked what you said about him kind of personifying those early 2000s Oilers, where he had so much promise, and it's a damn shame that he never got to play on a better Oilers team. Because if they could have
He scored the Patrick Steffen goal too, didn't he?
He did. He also sure scored the Patrick Steffen goal.
Yeah, he finished that one off, yeah.
So I was going to say that. My favorite moment was the Patrick Steffen one. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, he was a lot of the good moments when you think about those dark years or the beginning of the decade of darkness. Hemsky's involved in them, so I think he's a great Oiler. We've talked before about a Ring of Honor potentially going up at Rogers Place, and to me, Hemsky's got to be one of the first guys to get it, because I don't think he gets enough love from some of the media and some of the fan base.
In 11 seasons in Edmonton, or 652 games, Alex Hemsky scored 142 goals, 335 assists for 477 points. And for a lot of us that watched the Oilers during that time period, during the early 2000s, up until the moment when he left, actually, he was one of the best things to watch on most nights. He was undoubtedly talented. He could dangle guys. Like Dan said, he was ultimately very frustrating as well, because he has an absolute laser of a shot and he never used it. But he was so much fun to watch. He was so skilled. And I just think back to that season where the Oilers went on the cup run in 2006. And he was a 22-year-old with 77 points that year. He never matched again. He did get to 71 points in 2007-2008, but I remember having so much hope for Alex Hemsky, thinking, like, man, this guy is going to be sensational. And it was always, the Oilers need to find a winger to play with Hemsky. The Oilers need to find a winger to play with Hemsky. And I remember some of the hilarious ones, like Peter Sikora was there a couple of times.
Nedved
was there a couple of times. Horkov, you know, I mean, like, he was just fun. He was a fun player to watch. And like Rick said, he took so much shit.
And it was a bad time. It was a bad era for players like him too, right? Like it was physical. Nobody was really taking care of those guys. You know, the Darian Hatchers were on the ice and you were mauling forwards coming down the ice that time still. So it was not a very friendly time for offensive players like him.
Well, in the Battle of Alberta, you mentioned Robin Regier. Robin Regier stole Hemsky's lunch money on a nightly basis anytime the Oilers played the Flames. And it was just, he would always battle through. He would always bounce back. He would never really kind of stay down. And that's why I always thought it was funny, because if you guys remember, there was always that Hemsky is soft kind of narrative that would go through the media. And it was just like, okay, you could say he's soft, but have you seen him play? He takes more shit than anybody on that roster.
Do you remember Bugard
made like his life? Bugard made a life out of going after Hemsky, and so did Regier. Like Rick said, like the guy was picked on relentlessly because he was our one talent guy. Everybody else was, you know, you got Ryan Smith, who's a grinder. You got all these guys that are just, you know, they're able to take it all, and Hemsky did too because he had to. That's all he had.
I'm watching that clip right now of him getting blown up by Nicholas Cronwall. And I mean, credit to Hemsky. Like, he gets right back up in this clip, and you can tell he's shaken, but he gets up, he goes to the bench, stays on the bench as well. Like, he took a lot of shit, and he fought through a lot of shit.
Yep.
He was a fun player to watch. It's unfortunate the way things kind of ended. He was probably one of those players that got traded out of Edmonton too late rather than too soon. So that was disappointing, but overall, I loved watching that guy play. And I remember, too, even when he got moved from Edmonton to Ottawa at that trade deadline, he went out and scored an absolute beauty of a goal for the Senators right away. And everybody was just so in love with it. And just kind of, you would see those flashes of brilliance from him every now and then. And he was a great Oiler to watch. Happy to see him with his adorable family going off into the sunset, doing whatever it is that they do now. And for the cap to former Edmonton Oiler, Alex Hemsky. He was a lot of fun for teams that were not very much fun. And I think that's kind of all you can really say about it.
Oh, that goal he scored for the Sens against the Lightning? Oh, man, that was just nasty. I'm watching highlights of Hemsky while we do the pod. Holy shit, man. What defenseman was that? Because that guy should be automatically put on waivers whatever year this was in.
Yeah, I'll find that clip, too, for the article for the podcast. Too,
I think it was Radko Gudas.
Because that goal, like Tyler's watching that one for Ottawa right now, is just bananas. The dangle, the finish, the celebration, all of it. Sick. It was great. It was absolutely great.
We interrupt your cat video.
Are you guys watching cat videos?
I'm opening up the YouTube. I want to see the goal.
Good for you, Rick.
It has an ad first.
We interrupt your cat video.
Yeah, Rick's watching cat videos.
It's for Frosted Flakes, man. It was chocolate Frosted Flakes. No, that was the commercial. Oh, there's like the dangle. Oh, yeah, that's sick.
So yes. We're gonna throw that one in the article here after, because a beautiful goal, a very, very talented player. So shout out to Alex Hemsky. In other news, though, today it is Friday, May 15th, and boys, that brings us to over 1 year. 1 year of having Ken Holland sign on as the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. We posted an article at 9:48 on May 5th of 2019. Chris, the former intern, RIP, wrote about it. Paperwork was getting done. Darren Dreger reported that the Oilers were indeed signing Ken Holland to a 5-year contract at $5 million. Gentlemen, I want to look back at the past year of Ken Holland, look at some of his work, what you liked, maybe what you didn't like, your thoughts coming into the Ken Holland era, your thoughts after a year of hindsight. What do you guys think?
First of all, can I say we got to give some love to former Saskatchewan Roughriders play-by-play guy Rod Peterson, who tweeted like a month before this happened, Ken Holland will be the next GM of the Oilers. And I'm not sure.
What's the CFL guy going to know?
Oh, I was one of those people saying, what is the CFL guy going to know? But credit to Rod, man. Absolute beauty, and he nailed this one. As far as Ken Holland's first year, he got them out from the Lucic contract. He went out and got guys who can improve the penalty kill. He made a gamble and it paid off on a guy like Mike Smith. He took that approach of, instead of buying, and we've used this analogy and debated it a lot, instead of going out and buying $120 scratch ticket. He went out and bought 10 $2 scratch tickets. And hey, guys like Shahan, Archibald, Haas, and Nygaard, they worked out for him. Guys like Yerkcho maybe didn't, but that's the risk you kind of take. And as much as I was kind of against that strategy last summer, and I think me and Dan got into a lot of fights over this, credit to Dan, credit to Ken Holland. It worked. And I think the first year of Ken Holland at the helm for the Oilers was, I give him an A grade.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of negative you can give to him. He came in with a bit of a tire fire, and I think everything he's done has been pretty much a positive. I'm sure there'd be one or two things he'd either change, but from what he's done, where we were this time last year to where we are right now, I don't know how you can give him anything besides a passing grade here.
Credit where credit is due. Rick was also on the team scratch.
I was definitely, yeah. I was against scratch ticket. I was.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah.
I was on like, let's get, yeah. I was like, let's get $2-3 million guys instead of, you know, $5-1 million guys.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, I'm with you guys. I think he's done great. I think the thing is that you could point at and say, like, is maybe the Chiasson contract where he, you know, he was probably convinced by the rest of the organization to do that one. And the AA trade right now, I would say the jury is still out on that one.
That's not really fair though either, right? Because we didn't get the rest of the season.
Of course not. But it is just a, you know, it's a question mark as to whether you re-sign the guy for the right deal or if we lose him next year. Like, who knows, right? So that would be my only time that I would even criticize him. But yeah, 100%. He did the Lucic thing. His trades, the John Marino one again. You know, his hand was forced. It wasn't necessarily his choice.
Marino, we don't know that for sure. Here, yeah,
exactly. So it is one that, you know, you just can't fault him on. So yeah, I'd say a solid B grade for it so far.
For me, I think it's like, I remember thinking when Ken Holland was hired, I was just like, oh, come on, man, is this really all that much different? He was an old kind of hockey boy. He's been around 100 years. I was really hoping for Kelly McCrimmon. Obviously that didn't work out. He got promoted in Vegas, but I was questioning it, and I was happy to be wrong. And there was no better time to be wrong about the Ken Holland hire than on July 19th, 2019, when 2 short months after he was hired, he managed to move Milan Lucic, retained $750,000 of that conditional third round pick to Calgary, of all places, in exchange for James Neal. Once that happened, all I thought was, whoa, because that was the kind of move that we needed Peter Chiarelli to make so often, but he didn't. He would just find ways to bungle things and fuck it all up. And then Ken Holland comes in and moves a guy that everybody needed to move, whether that was fans just from an emotional standpoint, whether that was the team from God, this guy sucks for what he's being paid standpoint. Everything. And to move him to Calgary of all places, yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So that was his very first trade as the Edmonton Oilers GM. And man, was it a banger.
You couldn't find a better way to appease your new fans.
It's like scoring a hat trick in your debut.
It's very much true.
Speaking of which, what was that guy's name? Fabian Brunström, was it him? That was the hot shit out of Sweden, and he came in and scored a hat trick in his first game, and everybody's like, oh shit.
I think a kid did it this year too, though. I think a kid did it for like Ottawa.
Oh yeah, who was it?
But it's weird, like, so I didn't realize this beforehand. They keep every single puck that goes in the net.
Oh yeah.
Right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the kid at the end of the game takes a picture of this with the three pucks, or you know, I think Joe Thornton did something this year where he score 4 and then he had all 4 pucks. And I was like, well, what the hell was the point of them keeping the first puck for?
Yeah. So I have an uncle who works for the NHL and he's transitioned. He's done a bunch of stuff. He was a concussion spotter for a little bit. So he's taught me about how that process works. He does stats now, but for a while he was working in the penalty box, and it's a fascinating process of like everything that goes on after a goal is scored. Like if you watch the one penalty box door, always stays open until they get an okay from upstairs that like the goal is good, and then they close the door. And yeah, every puck comes in after a goal, they sticker it right down the serial number, who scored it, all that stuff, put it into another container. It's really cool to kind of get an inside look at that. One day when he retires from working for the NHL, we'll get him on the pod.
What do they do with the pucks afterwards?
I think it's like if the player, you know, if it's a hat trick or whatever, they use it for that. If not, they go to like auctions and they sell them as like game used pucks, right?
I guess so.
That's so weird to think about, eh?
Yeah.
They turn them into chunks.
You'd think you just recycle them into. You think you just recycle them into practice pucks?
Yeah, I bet you there's a fair amount of that as well. But I mean, they can make money off that if you sell a used puck, right? On the topic of Fabian Brunstrom, he scored 3 goals in that one game. Never had a season where he scored more than 2 after that rookie year.
How much did he make though?
YouTube scouting.
Oh, I don't know how much he made, but.
That would have been like because of the worlds, right? Like he would have had a couple of good world tournaments and like Jiří Dopita.
Yeah. So Brunstrom, I just closed his page. There you go. He wasn't drafted, and the first year they have of him on HockeyDB is 05-06, where he scored he played 3 games, didn't get a point in some Swedish league, and then they have no stats for 06-07. Then in 07-08, he scored 9 goals in 54 games in the Swedish Elite League, and then the next year was randomly in the NHL.
So, yeah, it's like international tournaments where everyone gets all excited about him.
So random. Super random.
That is a name, a lot of hockey players know, or a lot of hockey fans know, hey? Like, just the way he came burst onto the scene like that?
Dude, there's a couple of those guys. I mean, remember the Monster coming across?
Yeah. Oh, I remember the hype around the Monster.
Do you know what that reminds me of? It was free agency day, whatever that was, a couple years ago when Peter Chiarelli signed the Monster. And I tweeted out from the Nation account, oh boy, I don't know about this one. And I got roasted for it. That was one of those moments where I was like, man, I was so right. And I took so much shit for days. Because obviously July 1st is in the middle of the summer. You have to wait months until hockey gets back. But man, did I take shit for a long time for making fun of the Monster. And boy, was I right. So
you were very right.
Props to me. I want to go back to Ken Holland real quick, boys, before we move on. So like I said, that first trade was the Lucic trade. That blew everyone's mind open. You guys mentioned the John Marino trade to Pittsburgh. His hands were tied there. That was a Chiarelli guy. Didn't want to sign here without him. Okay, fine. But then you look forward from there. He made a couple of the next trade he made were at this year's deadline. So he moved Kyle Brodziak, who was obviously retired, a conditional 4th in exchange for Mike Green. There's another player that we didn't get a real good chance to see because he got banged up and then the season got shut down. And then he traded Sam Gagner, second round pick this year and a second round pick next year to Detroit again for Andreas Athanasiou and Ryan Cuffner. You guys are forgetting about Ryan Cuffner. Don't sleep on Ryan Cuffner. And then he moved Tyler Ennis or acquired Tyler Ennis for a 5th round pick in 2021. And then Joel Pearson, I mean, do you guys even remember Joel Pearson? He got moved to
Anaheim,
to Anaheim for a 7th round pick in 2022. So the trades he has made so far as Edmonton Oilers GM, to me, wildly in the positive side as opposed to the negative side.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing you can really complain about there. He's not exactly been dealt the best hand. So where we are now is a hell of a lot better than where we were when he started. So,
yeah.
Give up Sam Gagner for 7 games of FSU and nothing else. I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, but watch Sam come back, though. Yeah, I've predicted this a bunch of times. Sam's coming back, 13th forward, less than $1 million. Let's go.
Yeah,
I'd love to see it. For me, the things that are knocks on Holland right now, like one, I would like to see him go out and get the goalie of the future for this team. Like last summer, I know I've been on this. You talked about people getting mad at you bag milk when you're clearly right. I was yelling for Tristan Jarry for so long last summer. Every day I'd go on podcasts, I'd go on the radio and be like, they need to go get this kid.
Were you confident going with Jarry and Mikko Koskinen, though, knowing what we knew about Mikko at the time? Like, we didn't see Mikko this year, so it was like he was a bad, bad taste in our mouth at the time.
I was of the mindset that they had to take a bit of a gamble, and you had to find someone and take a chance that, hey, it might not work, but there's also a chance this guy's your goalie for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I'll say. It worked with Mike Smith, and I give him credit for that. And again, maybe an instance where I was wrong because I wasn't the biggest fan of the Mike Smith signing, but I want to see him go out and get the goalie of the future. But aside from that, like, the cap situation's not his fault. The Oilers are in cap hell because of Peter Chiarelli and past blunders and buying guys out. It's not so much what Ken Holland's done. In fact, he's probably improved it with signings of guys like Caleb Jones to short-term, low-money deals, Josh Archibald and things like that. So I, again, like I don't really have anything that I can really, really knock Ken Holland for.
If you are going to pick a con, a knock against him, what would it be? Because like we said, all of us are pretty impressed with the work that Uncle Ken's done so far. I like the way he communicates with the media. I like the way he's made moves. I like the way that some of his scratch tickets have paid off. And when they don't pay off, like a Joel Pearson, he just moves on. I like all that. But if you're looking at maybe a negative, something he can improve on, what do you think? Dan?
Well, I said it early on. It's just it's the Chiasson kind of contract. It's not necessarily, Chiasson in himself, but you wish that money could have gone somewhere else or nowhere at all and just be sitting there for us to use later. But he felt like he needed a winger and somebody in the organization convinced him of such.
Tyler, what do you think? Is there a knock on Holland for you?
This is a tough knock because then you start kind of going down a rabbit hole of what could have happened, what didn't happen, what did happen because of it. But for me, it's the Sekera buyout. He only had 2 more years left. I know it was $5.5 million, and I know they did go out and use that money. But at the same time, like, you're telling me you couldn't retain 50% of that and get him off your books. And then I know it would have been a bit of a higher cap hit, but he would have been off your books quicker. I don't know. You're telling me Andre Sekera couldn't have been a useful defenseman for this team, and maybe you could have moved on from a guy like Chris Russell. It's just, to me, the buyout of Sekera sucks. I know it's hindsight and all that, but like, it's more dead money, and this organization has so much dead money on their books right now. So my one knock would be the Sekera buyout. That's the one move I wasn't in total agreement with.
Rick, what do you think?
If we're picking a, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I got to go with Tyler there and just go, you know what, just keeping Chris Russell along this long and choosing him over Sekera. I mean, I think I would have rather rolled the dice with the better player who is a little bit injury prone in the last little bit, but it wasn't an injury I expected to be something too serious going forward. So yeah, I would have rolled a Sekera.
Yeah. To me, I mean, I guess,
it's tough to pick anything right now, really. Like, it's really just, it's really tough. He's done a really good job so far.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of with you guys too. I didn't agree with buying out Sexy Reg at the time. I still think that he would probably have been more valuable on the third pairing, especially considering the Oilers have a hard time moving the puck from the back end at times. I feel like maybe Sexy Red would have helped. But, you know, water under the bridge. We'll see what happens because this summer, off-season, whenever the fuck that happens, I think we're all kind of expecting him to move on from Russell to clear space for be it Caleb Jones or somebody else. And then there's Bouchard that needs to move up. I know that kind of leads into our next question. But first, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at skipthedishes.ca. They are doing an excellent job keeping Edmonton fed during these strange, strange days. They've got countless options available for you, regardless of what kind of cuisine you were looking for. Maybe you want to join in the Donair bracket that we're doing on Nation Happy Hour that's going up live on Instagram Wednesdays and Fridays. Maybe you want to try out some Donair shops. Maybe you want to go some delicious pho. Maybe you just want some tasty nugs. Whatever you're looking for, skipthedishes.ca is there for you. And like Tyler always says, be sure to tip your drivers because they're doing, what else you need to say? Just tip them. They're doing wonderful work. They bring the food for you. Reward them for that work. That brings me to today's Armchair GM topic of the day. Tyler, what do you got for us?
Yes, sir. We're going to focus on the blue line. And you mentioned it. It goes nicely with the Sekera conversation in a way. Specifically on the right side, the Oilers are going to have some, it'll be interesting. Right now, they currently have Adam Larson, Ethan Bear, and Matt Benning on that right side of the blue line. But, you know, you got a guy like Evan Bouchard, who's going to be pushing up to get, he wants an NHL spot. And I think that's pretty clear. And I think it's at the point where I think it's likely he could be playing regular minutes in the NHL next season. That would give the Oilers 4 legitimate NHL defensemen on the right side. Ethan Bear is an RFA, but I don't think there's any question that he'll be brought back. Matt Benning's an RFA, and that's a bit of an interesting case as well, because if you're going to qualify him, it's going to push his cap hit to over $2 million a season. I really like Matt Benning, but if he's the guy who's holding that spot for Bouchard, and you know, you can maybe replace Benning's 2-point-something cap hit with Evan Bouchard on an entry level, it could be a way to save some money. Matt Benning is a young right-shot defenseman with offensive instincts and some upside. So I think you'd get a lot if you decided to trade him. But I guess my question to you guys would be, what's your defense look like next year for the Oilers? Who are the seven D-men that you'd like to see up with the big club? I don't know who wants to go first, but
I'll jump in on this one here. I think the left side is pretty much set out there. I think they all have contracts. You're rolling with Klefbom, Nurse, and Jones, right? Obviously, you can add Russell in there as he's got 1 year left. He shoots left, and then so you can make him the fourth technically. And then over on the right, you know what? Adam's got one more year left on his contract. I know some guys are saying we should look at re-signing Mike Green. I don't think I'd do that. I think he's going to be a little too expensive. What's Benning's contract? 10% raise? Just over two?
Yeah, it'll be like just over two.
Yeah, see,
1.9 right now.
Yeah, I think you got to keep Matt Benning. I'm keeping Larson and obviously Bear. And Bouchard's going to have an opportunity to crack the lineup. If Matt Benning turns into your number seven coming out of training camp and stuff, maybe you can look at moving him and bringing in a cheaper option and rolling him as number seven. But this way, if you keep Matt Benning right now, it does not force Bouchard to have to make the team. So if you allow Bouchard to either make it or not, like just not put that pressure on him to have to be there, kind of like Bear this season, I think that's the best for him. So I'm going to go with Matt Benning, and then Bouchard is kind of like the seven. They can rotate six and seven, and if Bouchard looks really good, you can move Benning in the first couple months of the year and bring someone else in.
Dan, what do you think?
I hate to be the guy that just agrees, but yes, I think that you've got a fine defensive six in Nurse, Bear, Klefbom, Larson, and then Jones and Benning. And then, yeah, I think you just see what you got in Bouchard next year. I know Holland is stocking the cupboards for defensemen. So I don't think you necessarily need to go out. Like if you're looking at the free agent list for guys, it's not that much better than what we have in house for guys of any kind of value. Like Mark Pisick is available from Florida, 28 years old, but you think he's going in probably the $3.5-4 million range. There's not a lot out there where you're going to be signing a guy with any kind of age where you'd want to keep working with him and not just have him in as a stopgap. And if you have a stopgap that, you know, that Evan Bouchard overpasses throughout the season, well then, you know, you have to move that stopgap out and you have to find somebody else that has contract or has the ability to fit that contract in. I just don't know if he can do it.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that the defense looking into next season is the exact same as it was this year. Unless he moves Russell, which I think he probably will to try and save some money and give Caleb Jones that spot. Outside of that, I think it looks the exact same, except we sub in Caleb Jones on that third pairing left side with Benning, because we already saw what he did with what Holland did with Yamamoto. Yamamoto didn't come up until that New Year's Eve game, and it worked out well. That's Holland's MO, so I feel like he's going to do the exact same thing with Evan
Bear,
Bouchard.
But Bear started right away. I guess Bear would be a little bit older, though.
Yeah, but like, I mean, that's the difference, I guess, is that Bear got some at-bats in the AHL. He was a little bit older. Looking at the Condor stats right now, Evan Bouchard was tied for second in team scoring. 36 points in 54 games. Tyler Benson would have had more than that, but he was called up to the big club, so he only had 47 games. But Evan Bouchard is still working on what is undoubtedly, outside of being a goalie, the hardest position in hockey. So I feel like Holland's just going to let him be the big fish down in Bakersfield for a little bit. And if it comes a time where he bullies his way onto the Oilers roster, then I think you look at Matt Benning. But where it gets interesting with Benning is that he's an RFA this summer, but there's only 1 year left of that. He is going to be a UFA next year. So they do have to make a call on him soon. And I kind of just think that they'll sign him this year, keep him, and maybe flip him at the deadline next year.
Or you just
like
let
that.
Him walk. Sometimes some of these guys just end up walking away for free, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens.
You get their use out of them and shake hands at the end of the time.
For me...
go ahead, Tyler.
I was just going to say, like, the interesting thing with Matt Benning is I look at a guy like that, and there are a ton of reasons to like that hockey player. And I wonder if there are some other teams out there that could really be liking that hockey player. And I'm not saying you go out and actively shop Matt Benning, because I think you have to be really careful that you don't deplete too much of your defensive depth by moving out both Russell and Benning in one offseason. But, you know, Mike Green's been hurt a lot. If he ends up being cheap, and what if it's, you know, a one-year, $1.5 million deal to keep Mike Green on this hockey team, he might be a cheaper version of Matt Benning. Bouchard's there is another insurance policy. They signed the big defenseman from Finland as well, Theodore Lennstrom. Teddy Lennstrom. What if there's an RFA, a young RFA centerman out there who, and a team's looking for some defensive depth, and you can just swap Benning for that center and a guy who can come be your third line center for the next 3, 4, 5 years and really solidify that position. Like, I'm not saying you have to trade Matt Benning. I'm not even saying I want to trade Matt Benning, but I'd be interested to see what he could bring you back in terms of a young forward. Like, I don't know if the value is even there, and this is a player I like, but Chris Tierney out in Ottawa. You know, Ottawa probably would benefit from getting some more defensemen in their system. Chris Tierney's an RFA. He would cost a little bit more money, but I just wonder if maybe there's a chance to parlay some of this defensive depth into really bolstering your forward crew and bolstering your top nine.
I mean, it would be nice to see the Oilers for once trade from a position of strength and actually improve another area of the team rather than just being like doing the exact opposite of that, as we saw with Peter Chiarelli for years. Do you know what I mean?
I think we're getting to that point, though.
I hope so.
We're getting there.
And I just, like, we also have to keep our fingers crossed that maybe there are other players in the system that turn into Ethan Bears. Because, like, if we had spoken at this point last year about Ethan Bears stepping into the lineup and doing what he did for the Oilers this year, none of us would have thought that was possible. Because I remember Caleb Jones was the one that was inked into the lineup.
Bear got hurt last year early, so then Jones kind of passed him in the chart.
So we'll have to see what happens, right? Ken Holland does like to let guys marinate, if you want to use that poor analogy, but so that adds an interesting layer to it. And like Tyler's point, right-handed defenseman, there is no position on the ice, it seems like, that is more inflated in value than a right-handed defenseman. And that's what Matt Benning is. So maybe there is a return out there that makes sense to move him. And then Bouchard just has to kind of adapt, or God forbid you have to move Russell over to the right side, which
people love to do. Stop
hey,
that.
I'm just saying, man, we've seen it plenty
Stop
of times.
That.
So it's going to be interesting to see what's going on with the Oilers defense next year.
We are in good shape, though, with those two righties in Bear and Bouchard.
Yeah, and there's also, I was just kind of, as you guys were talking, I was just doing a cruise around Twitter, and there's actually a sizable segment of Oilers fans and just hockey Twitter in general that is looking at maybe the Oilers should trade Adam Larson and keep Matt Benning.
Not yet. I think a guy like Larson, when it chips are down in the playoffs, when it gets mean out there, that's when you want him.
I agree with you 100%, Rick. I think that's a guy that in a playoff series, like, remember first game this year
when he
broke his foot and kept playing for some of the game? Like, you want that on your team in the playoffs. You want that mean physical defenseman who, when you're up by a goal, you put him out there because you know he's going to get in the lanes. He's going to make smart decisions with the puck. I think you keep Adam Larson around.
Dude, who's one of the biggest names you remember from 06 is Jason Smith.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say he's not exactly the same as Jason Smith, but he a little more offense and a little less mean, but he can do exactly what Gator was doing out there. I mean, you keep that guy around. I know he's only got 1 year left, and then he's UFA, so it's probably a contract that's going to be too long. So he's probably not going to be here, but I'll get that last year out of him.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that it's good. A good defensive grouping has three or four guys where you're just like, okay, those guys are solid penciled in dudes, and then you see what you have with the others. And I think we've seen what we have with Bear, we've seen what we have with Jones, but either of those guys could have a regression next year.
And they play different roles too, right? Like, yeah. Larson is good when it's defensive time and it's time to keep the puck of the net, you know, that's who you get out there. And then 5-on-5, dude, Bear looks good. And hopefully 5-on-5, 5-on-4, Bouchard's going to run it all for us. So we're in a good situation right now.
Well, and as always, cap concerns are going to be a problem for the Oilers, at least in the immediate future. So they're going to have to make some choices in terms of just purely monetary choices as well. So if we're looking at it from that lens, how are you guys clearing some money?
I don't think you have to. Obvious one. You don't have to quite yet, do you?
Russell's the obvious one to me.
Yeah, Russell's out, and then Larson's out the year after that. So that's four whatever, then another four something. Bouchard's not going to be getting four something to start. You're going to get Bear in at a nicer number. Jones is already in at less than two. Klefbom's only less than five. Nurse, who knows what that number turns out to be. So I don't think we're in that big of an issue when it comes to salary cap on the defense. And then some of that dead money comes off in the next year or two. We're going to get out of the Neal contract the next year or two. I think we're actually, we're out of the danger area. We're getting closer to the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the cap issues. There's still a little bit of time to go, but we're getting, it's not as bad anymore.
So looking at it, Eric Greiba comes off the books. Brandon Manning comes off the books. Tyler, no matter how bad you want him to come back, Marcus Granlund is coming off the books.
You better watch your mouth.
But it's still weird to look at this, right, on puckpedia.com and see Benoit Pouliot's name is still on the Oilers' books for another season.
And wasn't that the year where they didn't even use all their cap space, right?
Yeah, cap space spent a year up in Little Brick.
Yeah, like, fuck me.
That was Peter Chiarelli saying that he was guarding against the Leon Draisaitl offer sheet that nobody was ever going to put on him. So, like, thanks, Pete. You're just your gifts just keep paying off, don't they?
But we're almost out of that. We're almost out of that era. Like his touch, it's almost right off of us.
There's a little ways to go yet, but yeah, we are getting close there. So Benoit Pouliot's got 1.33 left on the 2020-2021 season as well. So shout out to Benoit getting some paychecks from the Oilers despite not having played in the league for a couple of seasons. That's a good life if you can get it.
He was there last year, wasn't he?
No.
No? Has he been out for
I think 16-17 was his last run.
I thought he had a decent start to the year like 2 years ago.
So Benoit Pouliot left Edmonton in 2016-17 and played 74 games with the Sabres in 2017-18. Got 13 goals, 6 assists for 19 points in 74 games. Did not play after that. So
okay.
Farewell,
Benoit.
Been
a while. Yeah.
You were a fancy stats darling. You took a lot of weird penalties. And now we get to remember you on our books for at least another season. What a time to be alive.
Dude, just be glad you're not a Mets fan. They've been paying Bobby Bonilla for two decades.
Tyler, you talked about this on Real Life.
Yeah.
Please run through it real quick again because this story is amazing.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know the Bobby Bonilla story, I still need to Google it to fully understand it. But basically, the Mets signed Bobby Bonilla to this massive contract, and then they released him before the 2000 season while still owing him $5.9 million for the final year of his contract, basically, like, with inflation and blah, 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 like, all the money that he was still owed for his contract, he decided to defer it and put it into payments of $1 million once a year until 2035, which means by the end of this, he would have been paid close to $30 million for that final year of his deal, and it was all because the Mets basically didn't have the cash at the time to pay him his money outright. It's a wild story. Like, go read it. If you just search Bobby Bonilla, there is a bunch of stories about it, but like the Mets pay him $1.19 million every single July 1st.
Dude, and then DiPietro and Yashin got some weird contracts too.
Oh, it's the best. See, like, but to be getting paid $1 million until 2035, that's another 15 years of just being like, cha-ching, all right.
You wake up January 1st with a bit of a hangover from your New Year's Eve party and look at your bank account and there's an extra mil in there. All right, I guess I will get the, you know what, supersize my meal today, please.
I've always wondered that with these players who have massive signing bonuses. Like, do they roll over in bed and open up, like, the TD mobile banking app and just go, like, yep, it's in there, and just see, like, 12 point. Does McDavid wake up on July 4th or whatever and just be like,
yeah,
perfect,
man.
12 point or 10.5 million. What do you want to do today, Lauren? Like, come on.
And he just goes back to sleep again. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I'm doing with the CERB thing. Just, you know, I'm waking up Tuesday morning. Yep, got an extra grand in my bank. Perfect.
Well, I mean, also a former Edmonton Oiler, Ilya Brzgalov, still on the Flyers books for a while as well. So I love those just long, insane buyouts. I'm pretty sure Yashin's just came off the Islanders book a couple years ago. They're the best.
Pietro's off the books now.
Is he?
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be any contracts still going in the NHL. That'd be crazy ones, right? Like, that would be the Kovalchuk one.
Yeah.
That wasn't allowed to go, right?
Wade Redden had a really bad one. We were talking about this on Real Life too. Remember when he was making like $6.5 million for a few seasons and was just playing for Hartford Wolfpack, like making more than probably what an entire division of teams made in the American Hockey League. Wade Redden just cashing in. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's any more like really bad ones.
I remember Archer Zerbe got sent to the minors like way back when, and he was making like $3 million a year and they were busting everywhere. So he just purchased the plane for everybody. He's like, all right, guys, we're flying today. Yeah, we're flying the whole team. Let's go, guys.
This is totally off topic, but I've heard stories about back when Patty Kane and Kostitsyn played on the London Knights. I don't know if this was Gagne's year or not. No, it was just Kane and Kostitsyn. The teams would bus to places, and sometimes the owner would let Kostitsyn and Kane fly with him to places.
I lied. Rick DiPietro is officially on the books until 2029.
Isn't Mike Richards on the books for a while?
Oh, Mike would have to.
I don't know, but it's $1.5 million from the Islanders until 2029. None of it counts against their cap.
When did he play
2003, it looks like.
Ooh. Yes.
2005, 2006.
25 years, 24 years of just straight money, eh?
That's so good. That is so good. Because it's just, I mean, Tyler's talked about this before. You can't save GMs from themselves.
No.
You just can't.
Well, the 8-year maxes on these things now, they're trying to get rid of some of those loopholes. It's kind of tying their hands, not letting them hang themselves.
Yeah, like one of the only really long contracts that I can think of that's going to work out for both sides is like their Sid's. Because he signed before the 8-year max. And then Ovi's, he signed before the 8-year max too. And I'm sure both teams are happy with those contracts. And I mean, in hindsight, neither of those guys is getting bought out is what I'm saying.
I have remembered what the best worst contract in the league is. It's Shea Weber and the whole cap
recapture.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at,
like Nashville,
I'm looking at it right now.
Nashville gets fucked if he retires.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like, they really do, bad too.
Yeah, okay, I can try to pull it up, but it's something like there would be a point if Shea Weber decided to retire and not just go on LTIR, which, I mean, in all likelihood, he would just go on LTIR, but there could be a situation where if Shea Weber retired, the Nashville Predators have a $24.5 million cap recapture penalty in 2025-2026. Can you imagine that? They get to an offseason, and there's like, fuck it, we have to literally trade everyone because we have to pay Shea Weber $25 million.
Man, so what we need to hope for, boys, is that Shea Weber actually retires so that we can go cash in on the Nashville Predators because they would be having an amazing yard sale. You brought up Mike Richards. Mike Richards is on the Kings books until 2025-2026. He's making anywhere, depending on the year, $700,000, $900,000, $600,000. So he's getting himself a nice couple of paychecks, too. Also on the Kings books, 2020-2021 is Ilya Kovalchuk. How about him getting his ridiculous contracts bought out by multiple teams over multiple periods in the NHL?
Yeah, man. Some of those, if you're in the right place at the right time, these contracts, you can become just filthy rich doing nothing. You look at a guy in the NFL, Sam Bradford, he's played, he's started like 21 games or something stupid like this, and he's near $100 million.
I love that, man. I just love this. You can't save these GMs from themselves sometimes. And for us, it makes for excellent pandemic fodder for the podcast.
As long as it's not on the Oilers.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they got Sexy Reg on there. It's 2.5. They've got the Lucic. We've already talked about Pouliot. So, yeah, they've got their share. Just thankfully, they don't go on for decades.
Oh, that'd be so frustrating, man.
Changing gears entirely, there's been a lot of talk about, I think it was TSN maybe, somebody was talking about Hall of Famers and potential Hall of Famers, maybe people that got snubbed. I got a little quiz for you boys. There are 8 Edmonton Oilers currently in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Oh,
I'm looking at all your faces right now. Nobody search. Let's go through them. I'm going to see how many you get. Some of them are very obvious. Others, not quite so. Who do you got?
Let's go through the banners first. So you've got Gretzky, Messier, Fuhr. You've got Anderson,
Curry,
Coffee,
and Curry. So that's six.
They're just
Slats.
Say there
would
be.
We're counting players only.
Okay. Al Hamilton.
Players only.
Hamilton's not in the Hall of Fame, though, is he?
Hamilton is not in the Hall of Fame, though he is up in the Raptors.
Does Jim Matheson count?
Of course, yeah, Maddie. We're gonna give Maddie a head nod.
I love Maddie.
So we're talking. Oilers. What's the exact category here?
Hockey Hall of Famers, but they played for the Edmonton Oilers. You guys are missing two.
For a certain amount of time.
They've played at least at least a handful of games with the Edmonton Oilers.
Oh, Adam Oates.
Adam Oates, there's a hidden one for Rick.
Nice pull, think, Rick.
Pronger's still not in the Hall of Fame yet.
Chris Pronger is the eighth player.
He is.
Is he in already?
Chris Pronger is the most recent inductee.
Huh.
Adam Oates is the hidden gem there.
Yeah, Adam Oates was the hidden gem because anybody who remembers Adam Oates' time here, he actually offered to pay the organization back the money they gave him because it just went so poorly for him.
What a guy.
But he was going to teach all our guys how to take face-offs.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Stoll and Horkoff gave him a lot of credit for teaching them how to win the face-offs cheekily, and then that turned into some domination in the playoffs.
Well, I always remember...
One thing that's not fair when you get taught like that is I think those guys, the Adam Oates, they have like dad strength at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're trying to teach like Stoley, who's 24. It's just not fair. But yeah, I get it.
So that's why we have the rule for not winning with your glove anymore.
Adam Oates also did a hilarious thing. I'll never forget this. I remember reading about how he used to customize his sticks for face-off wins. And he would like hack off 2 or 3 inches at the end of his blade to make it shorter and faster. For snapping pucks back. So
it'd be stronger too that way.
Probably. And I do believe, I could be wrong here. Somebody correct me if you're listening to this. I'm pretty sure he also was one of those guys that used a straight blade as well.
It was really, he did not have much of a curve at all.
Shout out to the straight blade people. So real quick around the horn, if we're going to guess the next Edmonton Oiler player to make the Hockey Hall.
Did we say Kevin Lowe?
He's not in the Hall of Fame.
He's not in.
Oh man.
He's
Sorry.
Supposed to be.
There you go. There's next, my answer. Sorry, Bag Milk.
Should be.
Hey, well, hey, there's Dan's answer. Next Edmonton Oiler to go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We already got Kevin Lowe on the board. Nathan Dan, that's probably one of the top answers in Family Feud.
Dude, Rick, the answer is obviously 97.
Yeah.
Nice. You think past or present, nobody will get into the hall before Connor?
Yes.
I'm with you, too. There's an interesting case for Ryan Smith because of his international success.
The Hockey Hall of Fame, yeah, instead of the NHL Hall of Fame.
It's not the NHL Hall of Fame, right? So that's where I think Ryan Smith's case gets a little interesting. Kevin Lowe's obviously high on the board, but it's Connor and
those
Leon.
Are the only two.
Yeah.
Those are the only two. Yeah, there's just Connor and Leon are the next to actual players, unless, you know, I don't see Smitty ever getting in. And,
could you see if Bill Guerin get in?
No.
He's got some rings, though.
Yeah.
You get like an Oiler.
You get
a former Oiler.
Yeah, 100%. If he got in, I would definitely fit into the category. He'd get like all his credentials in the U.S.
Yeah.
Hockey, but I don't know if he's going to get NHL.
There's also a guy, I don't know what the bar is for the Hockey Hall of Fame these days, but Dougie Waite, over 1,200 games, over 1,000 points. He's got a cup ring.
Yeah, Dougie Waite's an interesting one.
How many goals? How many points? It used to be like 500 goals got you in, right?
In 1,238 NHL games, Doug Waite had 278 goals, but 755 assists for 1,033 points.
That's tough.
So then we'd have to go and see what the baseline for points is to get into the Hall of Fame. Which
the
is
one thing, like there is there's a lot of really good players who don't get into the Hall of Fame, and that's I don't really like how the Hockey Hall of Fame always has four every year that get in. Like I'd like it to go to more of a baseball system where you need like a percentage of the vote to get in because then it's, you know, only like the true greats. I feel like sometimes the Hockey Hall of Fame gets a little watered down, but at the same time, it's a Hall of Fame. Like what am I really going to argue about, right?
that's where the Ryan Smiths get in. Yeah. As much as I love the Ryan Smiths, he's not a Hall of Famer until you start getting with your heart and stuff. And then, of course, he's in there.
All right. Before we started recording here, we were actually talking. I was putting together the mailbag for Monday that goes up on OilersNation.com. We were talking about Ring of Honor stuff. Smith was kind of everybody's first pick in terms of who you would want to see in the Ring of Honor. So
I think he's second. I think Kevin Lowe has to be first.
Yeah, Kevin Lowe again. Same goes.
If we do a Ring of Honor, then I think Kevin Lowe's got to go. And I mean, you can do two or three guys in the same night.
Kevin Lowe's banner still is going up, in my opinion. That's why I didn't include him in my Ring of Honor, because I think his number will be retired.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, he deserves to be hung up in whatever fashion you want to make it.
For me, my five were, I put Lowe on there as a Ring of Honor, and then I had Hemsky, Smitty, and I forget because I have my answers in front of me. But Hemsky and Smith were the two I had up there with Lowe.
I can't wait. Morgan Ranford.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm looking at the Hockey Hall of Fame website right now, and it's showing the first year eligible players for induction in 2020. So the minimum requirements for goalies is a minimum of 400 regular season games, over 200 NHL games, or recorded 25 or more NHL shutouts. And then for forward and defenseman, you have to have played a minimum of 1,000 games, a recorded minimum of 300 goals, 400 assists, or 700 points. Hmm. So. It's kind of like you got.
WA doesn't have those 300 goals.
No, but he's got. He's got over 1,000 points, though.
Yeah, he's got 1,000 in his house.
Hey guys,
the list right now is like coming into this year is Brian Campbell, Shane Doan, Michael Hanzus.
Look in the sky, everybody.
Tyler gets Chris your Neal, buttons ready because we are
Mark ready. Rivero.
We are going to finish off this week's podcast so we can all go sky gazing and look at the snowbirds.
It's 1:52.
It is 1:52 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on Friday, May 15th. It is time for the Oodle Noodle Hot and Cold Performers of the Week. We are going to rip through these so we can all go watch the snowbirds. All right, we're going to, as we always do, we're going to start with the Cold Performers of the Week. But first, I want to give a shout out to Oodle Noodle. They are donating 10% of all takeout orders to local charities and initiatives. This week, it is going to Dogs with Wings, and it is a great charity. Go check out at Oodle Noodle Graham and the Facebook page to see the video that Jay did at Dogs with Wings. He was playing with some adorable doggos. So, the Oodle Noodle Cold Performer of the Week, we're going to start with the Time Master, the guy who's pointing at his fake watch, Tyler Yaremchuk, your Oodle Noodle Cold Performer of the Week.
I'm going to give my cold performer of the week to a combination, and I'm going outside of hockey. It is both baseball players and baseball owners. The two of them cannot come to an agreement on what to do. They're fighting over millions and millions of dollars, saying they're putting their lives at risk, and the owners are saying we're doing what's best for the business. To me, it's a little nauseating right now hearing a bunch of millionaires fight over their millions and millions of dollars when, I mean, you're an entertainment thing. At some point, how about you both just take a bit of a cut and do something for the fans? So my cold performer of the week, baseball owners and baseball players who are fighting over that.
Cash money.
Uh-huh. Nice. Good for
timing.
Rick, your Oodle Noodle cold performer of the week.
We're going to go with the citizens of the city of Calgary and the city of Brooks, Alberta. They have almost slowed down the whole phase one for reopening for Alberta. And luckily we were able to do it outside of them because I think we can do it in a nice fashion. And yeah, I just wasn't too happy with them trying to slow things down by not taking proper precautions previously.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's cold. Dan, your Oodle Noodle Cult Performer of the Week.
Same kind of idea as Tyler's, actually. He gave me the idea. It's the CFL and the CFL Players Association not being able to come together and beg for money together. They're still bickering over who gets the money when the government does give them money. And I just think that that's ridiculous. Like Tyler said, we're not even talking about playing games and they can't come together on the agreement for who gets the cash. So it's the CFL Players Association, the CFL in general.
My cold performer of the week goes to the never-ending construction on my townhouse complex. This has been going on for fucking months, and now they are still working on stuff in my little area. The banging, the hammering, the lack of parking spot that I pay for is really annoying. cold performer of the week goes to this never-ending construction cycle on my townhouse. Flipping to the other side of the ledger, we're going to look at our Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week to look at a little bit of sunshine from the past 7 days. Nation Dan, your Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week.
My Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week harkens back to a tragedy that hit the Oilers organization a couple weeks ago with the loss of Colby Cave. The organizations, the Condors and the Oilers, came together and put together a beautiful book that they sent to Cave's widow, Emily Cave. And if you haven't had a chance to check that out, I think she posted it on her Instagram story, so it might be gone now. But just a beautiful thing with some video highlights within the book. I don't know how they do that technology these days, but it was amazing to see, and just a lot of memories for her and for the Cave family in general.
Put some respect on my name.
Mr. Yuremchuk, your Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week.
My Hot Performer of the Week is the Snowbirds, guys, and it's me for getting to watch the Snowbirds. I have never been excited about anything in the sky ever in my life. Fireworks, helicopters, planes, I don't give a shit. Today, I've decided I give a shit. Shout out to the Snowbirds.
Rick, your Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week.
That's easy. It's the rest of the citizens of this wonderful province of Alberta. we've got phase one. We're green light to go. And I was out yesterday and it looked very nice. People were distanced. People were calm, relaxed, having a good time. And I think it's smart to get out there and just do it safely.
Go out hooking.
And now you can.
get that bread.
I think that's phase two.
Get that bread, people. My Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week is probably going to take up about 6 or 7 minutes of time here. Just I got a little bit of a rant that I want to go on. Just kidding, Tyler. I wouldn't ruin this for you, buddy. My Hot Performer of the Week, future new album, Life is Good. Just downloaded it. It is straight gas. So many good tracks on there. Hot Performer of the Week, go in the future. From all our friends at Sherwood Ford, the Giant, skipthedishes.ca, and of course, Oodle Noodle. I want to say thank you to all of them for making this possible. I want to say thank you to Dan, Tyler, and Rick for an hour of your time. And I also
want to thank
the Snowbirds for brightening our Friday afternoon. So we're going to shut down episode 86 of Oilers Nation Radio. We are all going to rush outside and we are going to look skyward as those snowbirds are making a tour around Edmonton.
What?
I have something else I want to say, Tyler.
No, you don't.
I just want to say, shout out Damien.
Best wishes.
Thanks for listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media to stay up to date and never miss a podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.